Welcome to the Portage County Safety Council podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's safety chat.
Hi, this is Nick Coy with the Portage County Safety Council. Today I'm here with Eric White from the Ohio BWC. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Hey, Eric, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, like you said, my name is Eric White. I work for the Bureau of Workers' Compensation with the Division of Safety and Hygiene. I primarily do safety consulting. That's all I do is safety consulting. My passion is on the construction side, but I find myself doing more and more in the general industry as well. I've been with the Bureau. This is my 18th year now.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being out here today. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about fall protection. So, Eric, when you're out consulting, what are the top three problems you find related to fall protection within general industry?
Well, with general industry, and it probably as well as with construction, lack of training is probably the biggest thing that I see. Most employers, when it comes to fall protection, they may or may not realize they have a problem, but when they do, they just give their employees the equipment, the harnesses, the lanyards, but they don't follow it up with any training or inspection. So I would say training, and then obviously then the employees themselves not wearing it correctly, whether it's the harness not fitting them correctly, or maybe when it comes to connecting the lanyards to appropriate anchorages, either the anchorages aren't appropriate or they're not at the right height.
Okay. And so what would training look like for this? How often should we be doing training? Is it annual? Is it just once when we hire them? How do we handle that?
Well, when it comes to fall protection, OSHA is not as specific, I guess. They basically say you must train that employee. If they're going to wear fall protection, you have to train them on how to recognize the hazard and then how to avoid the hazard. And if we're just strictly going to talk about wearing the harnesses and lanyards as far as the protection, then we need to train them on proper wear, train them on how to inspect it, when to wear it, train them on how to identify the correct anchorage points, train them on how to connect to those anchor points, whether they're using 6-foot shock absorbing lanyards, or they're using a restraining device, or if they're using a shock absorbing lanyard, or a if they're using a self-retracting lanyard. They need to be able to recognize how to use that, how to inspect it, and then how to properly connect to it.
I'd say, too, probably the training needs to be there for supervision so they can ensure that that's happening the right way on the shop floor.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, not only do you need to make sure that your employees are trained, but your supervision is trained so that they know when is the appropriate time and place and equipment to use for fall protection.
Okay. So if somebody was in this lifeline, in this body harness, and they fall, what are some rescue options that we should be looking for?
Well, most employers don't even think about rescue. They put them in the equipment, but then in the event of the fall, what do you do? So you got to have a plan. So whether that plan is simply a self-rescue, which would be the best type of rescue, that employee is at one level and they fall into a lower level and they're able to rescue themselves, that would be the best type. But if that's not possible, then you need to have a plan and practice that plan. And that plan could be as simple as a ladder, getting a ladder to that person, a scaffold, a lift. All those are options for you for rescue, but the point is to have a plan and then execute that plan by practicing.
Good. And so that's probably something that they should be having regular discussions about prior to the start of that work.
Yeah,
especially
absolutely.
For maintenance people when they're going from different parts of the plant to different parts, or on construction sites where it changes from day to day.
Yeah, and especially if they're working by themselves, which you see a lot of maintenance persons, they're working by themselves, whether it's day shift or worst case, maybe even being in the middle of the night when nobody else may be around. So practicing that plan is the best way to do that.
Earlier you talked about anchorage points being a problem also. So how much weight should that anchorage point be able to hold? Can I just tie off to the sprinkler line, or am I looking for something a little more stable?
I see a lot of sprinkler lines tied off to, whether it's a sprinkler line or I see people tying off to conduit. Conduit is a big one, but that anchorage point needs to be able to withstand, if you're looking at it just from a compliance standpoint, 5,000 pounds per person.
So 5,000 pounds, what does that look like? Is that, you know, a bag of concrete? Are we talking a semi? How much is 5,000 pounds?
That's a good question. It's typically can be hard to tell. That's where if I'm out consulting and somebody will ask me, can I tie off to that? Well, I'll say, I don't know. If I'm unsure, I will tell them you might want to hire or have somebody like an engineer come in and do an evaluation on that potential anchor to see if it will withstand that 5,000-pound load. But the analogy I always give people, and it's a good one, is, you know, if you look at that, does that whatever that is, that piece of conduit, is that conduit, if I tie off to it, is it going to hold a full-size F-150 pickup truck? If you don't think it will, then it's probably not a good anchorage point. But I always err on the side of caution and advise them if it's not obvious, if it's not a large column or a large beam or something like that, I recommend that they have an engineer come in and do an evaluation.
Okay, well, that's understandable. So when we look at general industry, some areas that I've seen out consulting is man lifts and types of connection devices. So what do you recommend or what should be used when we're working from a JLG? How should we be connecting to that?
Well, my preference is anytime I go out in consulting, I always try to steer people away from using the 6-foot shock absorbing lanyards. And the main reason that I steer them away from the 6-footers is because you don't always have that required clearance below your anchorage point. Now, if we're talking about a boom lift, like a JLG, for example, if you read the code book, the code will tell us that when our employees are in those lifts, they have to be anchored in such a way, they actually use the term tethered. They have to be tethered in that lift so that in the event of a catapult, they can't go out over the guardrails and be hanging down below the lift. Now, the only way that you can do that is by shortening down your lanyard. So you can go on YouTube and watch all kinds of videos with guys in 6-foot shock absorbing lanyards getting catapulted out. That's obviously the biggest hazard. So a 6-foot shock absorbing lanyard is not going to prevent that. So I kind of tell them do a good, better, best type of approach. And my best approach to that would be a short 3-foot lanyard. Now, the problem with a 3-foot lanyard is one, it's not going to allow you to move around in that lift and be mobile in that lift. So if you're doing a lot of work to where you need to move around in that basket, that's not going to be very practical because it's going to be too short. So the next approach I would tell them then would be to go to the self-retracting lifeline. The self-retracting lifeline is going to allow you to be mobile because it's going to be able to move if you have a 6-foot or an 8-foot tether inside that shock or inside the housing. It's going to allow you to move, but also in the event of a catapulting effect, it's going to lock up, not allowing you to go out over the guardrail. And then the last thing that you would want to consider would be the 6-foot shock absorbing lanyard. And I wouldn't recommend that ever, but you see a lot of people doing it because it's the way they've been trained. But I always steer them away from those. And I guess the best thing would be to go to the 3-footer. But if you need to be mobile, the next best thing would be the retractable device.
I think it's important to note, too, when we talk about those retractable devices, is training on that piece of that doesn't give you the go-ahead to stand on the mid-rail or top rail of that.
Right. And that's the other thing I talk about is, you know, the retractables aren't an end-all to be-all. They work very well, but they also can get you in trouble because they're going to allow you to climb because of the extended reach of the retractable. So, you know, I always tell people, you know, I know everybody's a good little soldier and they keep their feet on the deck of the lift and they never climb, they never stand on the mid rail, they never stand on buckets. Or from time to time, I'll see them taking extension ladders or step ladders inside those lifts to also extend their reach. So obviously, if you're above the guardrail while wearing a retractable device, you still could be catapulted or fall out of the basket. But the whole goal when working out of a boom lift is to stay in the basket. And obviously, that's why you wouldn't want to climb or stand on a bucket or anything like that.
Right. You know, another problem I see often is, and I get a lot of questions about, are body belts. Can we use these body belts? Where are they acceptable? Where are they not acceptable?
Well, can you use them? Yes. They actually are still allowed to be used as long as you are what they call in a restraint. But in theory, if you are in a lift and you're using a short 3-foot lanyard with a belt, that is in compliance. I never recommend that because eventually somebody will use it in a scenario to where they're not being restrained. So yes, you can use them, but I always steer people away from the belt because a harness will do everything a belt will. And you certainly never want to be in a belt if you could be in a situation to where you could actually fall from one level to the other.
You know, and I think one place that I see this often as I do walkarounds are order pickers. I'm still finding a lot of order pickers wearing that belt, and they're actually reaching with no guardrail on the outside of that, so that creates an issue.
Right. I mean, exactly. So if you're on an order picker and you're out on that pallet pulling things off racks and you've got a belt on, if you were to slip off that pallet, you're obviously going to be in a fall arrest scenario, so that belts would be something that you definitely would not want to be using in a picker.
Okay. So as we have these pieces of equipment, one of the things you talked about was inspections. How often should we inspect our our body harnesses and our belts?
Well, if we look at it from the OSHA standpoint, OSHA in the code requires that you do a daily user inspection. But I always tell people, go back to the manufacturer, because OSHA is pretty silent on all the specifics when it comes to the equipment itself, the harnesses and the lanyards. So number one, always go back to the manufacturer, but a daily inspection is required. And that's something that user is going to want to do. And that would be that every time that they use that particular harness and lanyard, they want to do that daily inspection. And it's just a quick once over. It might take you 30 seconds, 60 seconds. It's just a user inspection. It does not require, or it's not required to be documented. But of course, you can always go above it beyond that if you wanted to document that daily. Now, if we go further inspections, you're also required to do an annual inspection of your harness and lanyards. And that inspection is going to be something that your competent person is going to want to do. It's going to be a little bit more comprehensive. It's going to be something where you're going to take that harness, you're going to take that lanyard out of service, you're going to put it on a bench, and you're going to do more of a fine-tooth comb inspection, if you will. And that's the inspection that you want to document. You want to document that on the harness, on the lanyard. Most manufacturers give you those spots on the harness and lanyard to document that you've done that inspection. And then, of course, always go back to the manufacturer. They'll provide you with the documentation and the checklist and what to look for.
How about some of these self-retracting lifelines and fall arrest devices? Do those need inspections, and should we be looking for a third party to do some of that inspections?
Yeah, the retractables, definitely. Just like the harnesses and regular lanyard, you want to inspect those as well. And again, always refer back to the manufacturer on how to do that. But does a third party need to do it? No. As long as you've got a trained, qualified person in-house through experience and other trainings, if you want to go ahead and tackle that in-house, you certainly can. But just make sure you're using the recommendations from the manufacturer.
Okay, so let's say that I have an in-house guy working for me, and he does this inspection, and he identifies I have a couple old lanyards and harnesses. What do we do with those?
Well, you want to destroy them. So regardless if the inspection is done by the user and that person finds something wrong with it, or if it's during the annual and the inspection shows that there's something wrong with it, whether it's just wear and tear, or maybe somebody they have fallen into the harness, they've fallen into the lanyard, you want to make sure you take those out of service, and you want to cut them up and make them unusable. Because if you just throw them in the trash, we know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to see that. They're going to say, man, I could use that at home on the farm, or maybe I could take that and put it in my deer stand. And you certainly wouldn't want them to do that.
So no hunting use for those after they're done?
Not after they've been fallen into by any means, no.
All right. Lastly, I just wanted to, one other problem that I see sometimes and get a lot of questions about is, in general industry, we have manufacturing processes that put employees at elevated surfaces. They have maybe work platforms around machinery, and they're working between 5 to 6 feet up. What are some fall protection options we can put in place?
Well, that's a tough one. I get that question all the time. I'll go out to a place and they've got machinery to where, like you said, they're up on a catwalk and they're changing dies or whatever the case might be, and that employee's feet may only be at a 6 or a 7 or 8 foot height. And that's a tough one. That's going to be difficult for you to achieve an anchor point as far as if you're using harnesses and lanyards. So my first thing I would tell them is, if you could put guardrails up there, that would be the best thing. So if they're up there on those catwalks or on the machines itself, if you could put a guardrail on there, that would be ideal. So, you know, just like everything else when it comes to personal protection equipment, when we look at OSHA, we always have to follow that hierarchy of control. So can I eliminate it? If I can't eliminate it, can I engineer it out? And that engineering, part of that engineering would be guardrails. And then if I can't guardrail it, then obviously then the fall arrest or fall restraint using the harness and lanyards, retractables, or whatever it is that you need to use, that would be the last resort. But that's typically difficult to do many, many times. And it can be done, but then it gets costly, and we know most employers, when you start throwing out those high dollars of engineering and getting anchor points and bringing specialized persons in to design and engineer those, the cost can go up pretty quick. So I would try to tackle them and steer them, tackle that by steering them toward guardrails if at all possible.
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, for being out here today. We appreciate all of this information. And to our listeners, have a great day and be safe.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. To learn more about how your company can earn up to a 4% Ohio BWC premium rebate by becoming an active member of the Portage County Safety Council, please visit our website at www.portagecountysafetycouncil.wordpress.com. The preceding information is for entertainment purposes only. Views expressed may not reflect the views of any affiliated or sponsoring individuals or organizations. Listeners should carefully weigh information provided and seek advice from an appropriate professional before implementing. Listener discretion is advised.